You don't understand. I looked at the goddess. I'm crying because I know what my mother would want. She'd want me to remember her as she was. That's the only monument she needs. She wouldn't want to be trapped, preserved, forced to live as a ghost in some cold storage underworld. Hel scowled, the right side of her face wrinkling and crackling. You dare? You want bravado? I pulled my pendant from its chain. Jack the sword stretched to full length, his blade steaming in the cold. Leave me alone! Tell Loki we have no deal. If I see you again, I'll cut you right down the dotted line. I raised my blade. The goddess dissolved into snow. My surroundings faded. Suddenly, I found myself balanced at the edge of a rooftop, 5 stories above a stretch of asphalt. Chapter 59. The Terror That Is Middle School. Before I could plummet to my death, someone grabbed me and pulled me back.
Whoa there, cowboy, Sam said.
She was dressed in a new peacoat, navy blue this time, with dark jeans and boots. Blue wasn't my favorite color, but it made her look dignified and serious, like an Air Force officer. Her headscarf was freckled with snow. Her axe wasn't at her side. I guessed it was tucked in the backpack over her shoulder. She didn't look surprised to see me. Then again, her expression was preoccupied, her gaze stuck somewhere in the distance. My senses started to adjust. Jack was still in my hand. For some reason, I didn't feel any exhaustion from his recent slaying of the giant sisters. Below us, the patch of asphalt was not exactly a playground, more like a holding area between school buildings. Inside the chain-link fence, a few dozen students huddled in cliques, chatting in doorways or pushing each other around the icy pavement. They looked like 7th graders, though it was hard to be sure with everybody in their dark winter coats. I wheeled my sword back into pendant form and returned it to its chain. I didn't figure I should be walking on the roof of a school with a broadsword. Where are we? I asked Sam.
My old stomping ground.
Her voice had a bitter edge.
Malcolm X Middle School.
I tried to imagine Sam down in that courtyard, mingling with those cliques of girls, her headscarf the only splash of color in the crowd. Why did Thor send you back to middle school? I asked. That seems especially cruel. She smirked.
He actually transported me home. I appeared in my bedroom, just in time for Jeed and Bibi to barge in and demand to know where I'd been. That conversation was worse than middle school.
My heart sank. I'd been so focused on my own problems, I'd forgotten that Sam was trying to balance a normal life on top of everything else. What did you tell them?
That I'd been staying with friends. They'll assume I meant Marianne Shaw.
Rather than 3 strange guys.
She hugged her arms. I told Bibi I tried to text her, which is true. She'll assume it was her fault. Bibi is hopeless with phones. Actually, Jotunheim just has no reception. I try not to actually lie, but I hate misleading them. After everything they've done for me, they worry I'm going to get in trouble, turn out like my mom.
You mean a successful doctor who liked to help people? Gee, that would be terrible. She gave me an eye roll.
You know what I mean. A rebel, an embarrassment. They locked me in my room, told me I was grounded until doomsday. I didn't have the heart to tell them that might be tonight.
The wind picked up, spinning the old metal roof fans like pinwheels. How did you sneak out? I asked.
I didn't. I just appeared here. She gazed down into the courtyard. Maybe I needed a reminder of how it all started. My brain felt as rusty as the roof fans, but one thought gained traction and started to spin. This is where you became a Valkyrie. Sam nodded. A frost giant. He'd gotten into the school somehow. Maybe looking for me. Maybe hunting some other demigod. He wrecked a few classrooms, caused a panic. He didn't seem to care if there were mortal casualties. The school went on lockdown. They didn't know what they were dealing with. They thought some crazy human was making a scene. They called the police, but there was no time.
She slipped her hands into her coat pockets.
I taunted the giant. Insulted his mom, that kind of thing. I lured him up here to the roof and...
She looked below us.
The giant couldn't fly. He landed right there on the asphalt and shattered into a million shards of ice.
She sounded strangely embarrassed.
You took on a giant single-handedly, I said. You saved your school.
I suppose, she said. The staff, the police, they never figured out what happened. They thought the guy must have fled the scene. In the confusion, nobody noticed what I'd done. Except Odin. After the giant died, the Allfather appeared in front of me, right where you're standing. He offered me a job as a Valkyrie. I accepted.
After my conversation with Hel, I didn't think it was possible for me to feel worse. The loss of my mother still stung as painfully as the night she died. But Sam's story made me feel bad in a different way. Sam had brought me to Valhalla. She'd lost her place among the Valkyries because she believed I was a hero. A hero like her. And despite all that had happened since, she didn't seem to blame me.
Do you regret it? I asked. Taking my soul when I fell?
She laughed under her breath. You don't get it, Magnus. I was told to bring you to Valhalla. And not by Loki. By Odin himself.
My pendant heated up against my collarbone. For an instant, I smelled warm roses and strawberries, as if I'd stepped through a pocket of summer.
Odin, I said. I thought he was missing. Hadn't appeared since you became a Valkyrie.
He told me to say nothing.
Sam shivered.
I guess I failed in that, too. The night before your fight with Surt, Odin met me outside my grandparents' house. He was disguised as a homeless guy, a ratty beard, an old blue coat, a broad-brimmed hat. But I knew who he was. The eye patch, the voice. He told me to watch for you, and if you fought well, to bring you to Valhalla.
Down in the courtyard, a period bell rang. The students headed inside, jostling and laughing. For them, it was a normal school day, the kind of day I could hardly remember.
I was wrongly chosen, I said. The Norns told me I wasn't supposed to be in Valhalla. Yet you were, Sam said. Odin foresaw it. I don't know why the contradiction, but we have to finish this quest. We have to reach that island tonight.
I watched the snow erase footprints in the empty yard. Soon, there'd be no more trace of the students than there was of the frost giant's impact from 2 years ago. I wasn't sure what to think about Odin choosing me for Valhalla. I suppose I should have felt honored. The Allfather himself thought I was important. He had chosen me, no matter what the Norn said. But if that was true, why hadn't Odin bothered to meet me in person? Loki was bound on a slab for eternity, He'd found a way to talk to me. Mimir was a severed head. He'd made the trip.
But the Allfather, the great sorcerer who could supposedly bend reality just by speaking a rune, he couldn't find the time for a quick check-in?
Hel's voice echoed in my head.
Do you really belong in Valhalla, Magnus?
I just came from Bunker Hill, I told Sam. Hel offered me a reunion with my mother. I managed to tell her the story.
Samira reached out, as if to touch my arm, then apparently changed her mind. I'm so sorry, Magnus. But Hel lies. You can't trust her. She's just like my father, only colder. You made the right choice.
Yeah, still. You ever do the right thing, and you know it's the right thing, but it leaves you feeling horrible?
You've just described most days of my life.
Sam pulled up her hood.
When I became a Valkyrie, I'm still not sure why I fought that frost giant. The kids at Malcolm X were terrible to me. The usual garbage. They asked me if I was a terrorist. They yanked off my hijab. They slipped disgusting notes and pictures into my locker. When that giant attacked, I could have pretended to be just another mortal and gotten myself to safety. But I didn't even think about running away. Why did I risk my life for those kids?
I smiled.
What? She demanded.
Somebody once told me that a hero's bravery has to be unplanned, a genuine response to a crisis. It has to come from the heart, without any thought of reward.
Sam huffed.
That somebody sounds pretty smug.
Maybe you didn't need to come here, I decided. Maybe I did. To understand why we're a good team.
Oh?
She arched an eyebrow.
Are we a good team now?
We're about to find out.
I gazed north into the snowstorm. Somewhere in that direction lay downtown Boston and Long Wharf.
Let's find Blitzen and Hearthstone. We've got a fire giant to extinguish.
Chapter 60. A lovely homicidal sunset cruise. Blitz and Hearth were waiting for us outside the New England Aquarium. Blitz had scored a new outfit, of course. Olive-colored fatigues, a yellow ascot, and a matching yellow pith helmet with yellow sunproof netting.
My wolf-hunting clothes, he told us cheerfully.
He explained how Thor's magic had transported him where he most needed to be, the best department store in Nidavellir. He'd used his Svartalf Express card to charge a number of expeditionary supplies, including several spare outfits and a retractable bone steel harpoon.
Not only that, Blit said, but the contest scandal with Junior, it backfired on the old maggot. Word got around about how badly he failed. Nobody is blaming me anymore, or the horsefly, or anything. People started talking about my stylish armor designs, and now they're clamoring for product. If I live through tonight, I might get to start my own clothing line after all.
Sam and I both congratulated him, though living through the night did seem like a pretty big if. Nevertheless, Blitz was so happy, I didn't want to bring him down. He started bouncing on his heels, singing Sharp-Dressed Dwarf under his breath. As for Hearth, he'd done a different kind of shopping. He was now carrying a polished staff of white oak. At the top, the staff split into a Y like a slingshot. I got the feeling, I don't know how, that a piece was missing between the two prongs. With his staff in hand, Hearth looked like a proper sword and sorcery elf,
except that he was still wearing black jeans, a leather jacket over a House of Blues t-shirt, and a candy-striped scarf. Harth rested the staff in the crook of his arm and explained in signs how he'd ended up in Mimir's well. The capo had pronounced him a full master of Alf Seder, ready to use a sorcerer's staff.
"Isn't that awesome?"
Blitzen clapped him on the back.
"I knew he could do it!"
Hearthstone pursed his lips. "I don't feel like a master." "I've got something that might help." I reached in my pocket and pulled out the runestone Perthro. "A couple of hours ago, I had a conversation with Hel. She reminded me of everything I've lost. I told them what the half-zombie goddess had offered me."
"Ah, kid,"
Blitzen shook his head.
"Here I've been going on about my new clothing line, and you had to deal with that."
"It's okay," I assured him. Strangely, it did feel okay. "The thing is, when I appeared on Bunker Hill, I'd just used my sword to kill two giantesses. I should have passed out or died from exhaustion. I didn't. I think I know why." I turned the runestone between my fingers. "The longer I'm with you guys, the easier it gets to use my sword, or heal, or do anything, really. I'm no magic expert, but I think... somehow, we're sharing the cost." I held out the rune for Hearthstone. "I know what it feels like to be an empty cup, to have everything taken away from you. But you're not alone. However much magic you need to use, it's okay. We've got you. We're your family." Harth's eyes rimmed with green water. "He signed to us. And this time, I think he actually meant I love you, and not the giantesses are drunk." He took the rune and set it between the prongs of his new staff. The stone snapped into place the same way my pendant did on its chain. The symbol Perthro glowed with a gentle gold light. "My sign," he announced. "My family's sign." Blitzen sniffled.
"I like that. A family of four empty cups."
Sam wiped her eyes. "Suddenly I feel thirsty."
"Al-Abbas," I said, "I nominate you for the role of annoying sister."
"Shut up, Magnus."
She straightened her coat, shouldered her backpack, and took a deep breath.
"All right. If we're done with the family bonding, I don't suppose anyone knows where we can find two dwarves with a boat?"
"I do."
Blitzen fluffed his ascot.
"Harth and I scouted it out before you got here. Come on."
He led the way down the pier. I think he just wanted us to appreciate how well he swaggered in his new yellow pith helmet. At the end of Long Wharf, across from the closed-for-the-season kiosk for whale-watching tours, another kiosk had been cobbled together from plywood scraps and cardboard appliance boxes. Above the service window, a sloppily finger-painted sign read, "Wolf Watching Cruise, tonight only, one red gold per person, children under 5 free." Sitting in the booth was a dwarf who was definitely less Svartalf and more maggot. About 2 feet tall, he had so much facial hair it was impossible to tell if he had eyes or a mouth. He was dressed in a yellow rain slicker and a captain's hat, which no doubt protected him from the dim daylight, and also made him look like the mascot for a gnomish lobster restaurant franchise.
"Hello there," said the dwarf. "Fiala are at your service. Care to take the cruise? Lovely wolf-spotting weather."
"Fialar?"
Blitzen's face sagged.
"You wouldn't happen to have a brother named Gialar?"
"Right over there."
I wasn't sure how I'd missed it, but docked a few feet away was a Viking longship fitted with an outboard motor. At the stern, chewing on a piece of jerky,
sat another dwarf who looked exactly like Fjallar, except he wore grease-stained coveralls and a floppy-brimmed felt hat.
"I can see you've heard about our exceptional service," Fjallar continued. "So, can I put you down for 4 tickets? Once a year opportunity."
"Excuse us a moment."
Blitzen steered us out of earshot.
"Those are Fjallar and Gjallar," he whispered. "They're notorious."
"Thor warned us," Sam said. "We don't have much choice."
"I know, but..."
Blitzen wrung his hands.
"Fjallar and Gjallar? They've been robbing and murdering people for over 1,000 years. They'll try to kill us if we give them any opportunity."
"So basically," I summed up, "they're like pretty much everyone else we've met."
"They'll stab us in the back,"
Blitz fretted.
"Or strand us on a desert island. Or shove us overboard into the mouth of a shark."
Harth pointed to himself, then tapped a finger to his palm. "I'm sold." We marched back to the kiosk. I smiled at the homicidal lobster mascot. "We'd love 4 tickets, please." Chapter 61. Heather is my new least favorite flower. I didn't think anything could be worse than our fishing expedition with Harald. I was wrong. As soon as we left the harbor, the sky darkened. The water turned as black as squid ink. Through the haze of snow, the shoreline of Boston morphed into something primeval, the way it might have looked when Skirnir's descendant first sailed his longship up the Charles. Downtown was reduced to a few gray hills. The runways at Logan Airport turned to sheets of ice floating on open water. Islands sank and rose around us like a time-lapse video of the last 2 millennia. It occurred to me that I might be looking at the future rather than the past, the way Boston would appear after Ragnarok. I decided to keep that thought to myself. In the quiet of the bay, Gjallar's outboard motor made an obscene amount of noise, rattling, growling, and coughing smoke as our boat cut through the water. Any monsters within a 5-mile radius would know where to find us. At the prow, Fjallar kept watch, occasionally shouting warnings to his brother.
"Rocks to port! Iceberg to starboard! Kraken at 2 o'clock!
None of that helped calm my nerves. Surt had promised we would meet tonight. He planned on burning my friends and me alive and destroying the 9 worlds. But in the back of my mind lurked an even deeper fear. I was about to meet the wolf at last. That realization dredged up every nightmare I'd ever had about glowing blue eyes, white fangs, feral snarls in the darkness. Sitting next to me, Sam kept her axe across her lap, where the dwarves could see it. Blitzen fussed with his yellow ascot, as if he could intimidate our hosts with his wardrobe. Hearthstone practiced making his new staff appear and disappear. If he did it right, the staff shot into his hand out of nowhere, like a bouquet of flowers spring-loaded in a magician's sleeve. If he did it wrong, he goosed Blitzen or whopped me upside the back of the head. After a few hours, and a dozen staff-induced concussions, the boat shuddered like we'd hit a cross-current. From the bow, Fjallar announced,
"It won't be long now. We've entered Amsvartnir, Pitch Black Bay."
"Gee," I looked at the inky waves,
"why do they call it that?"
The clouds broke. The full moon, pale and silver, peered down at us from a starless void. In front of us, fog and moonlight wove together, forming a coastline. I'd never hated the full moon so much.
"Lingvi," Fjallar announced. "The Isle of Heather, prison of the wolf."
The island looked like the caldera of an ancient volcano, a flattened cone maybe 50 feet above sea level. I'd always thought of heather as purple, but the rocky slopes were carpeted with ghostly white flowers. "If that's heather," I said, "there sure is a lot of it." Fialar cackled.
"It's a magical plant, my friend, used to ward off evil and keep ghosts at bay. What better prison for Fenris Wolf than an island entirely ringed with the stuff?"
Sam rose. "If Fenris is as big as I've heard, shouldn't we be able to see him by now?"
"Oh, no," Fialar said. "You have to go ashore for that. Fenris lies bound in the center of the island, like a runestone in a bowl."
I glanced at Hearthstone. I doubted he could read Fialar's lips behind that bushy beard, but I didn't like the reference to a runestone in a bowl. I remembered the other meaning of Perthrow, a dice-rolling cup. I didn't want to run blindly into that caldera and hope for Yahtzee. When we were about 10 feet from the beach, the keel of the boat ground against a sandbar. The sound reminded me unpleasantly of the night my mother died, our apartment door creaking just before it burst open.
"Out you go," Fialar said cheerfully. "Enjoy your walking tour. Just head over the ridge there. I think you'll find the wolf well worth the trip."
Maybe it was my imagination, but my nostrils filled with the smell of smoke and wet animal fur. My new Inherye heart was testing the limits of how fast it could beat. If it hadn't been for my friends, I'm not sure I would have had the courage to disembark. Hearthstone leaped over the side first. Sam and Blitzen followed. Not wanting to be stuck on the boat with Lobster Dwarf and his jerky-eating brother, I swung my legs overboard. The waist-deep water was so cold, I imagined I would be singing soprano for the rest of the week. I slogged onto the beach, and a wolf's howl split my eardrums. Now, sure, I'd been expecting a wolf. Ever since childhood, wolves had terrified me, so I tried my best to gather my courage. But Fenris's howl was unlike anything I'd ever heard, a note of pure rage so deep it seemed to shake me apart, breaking my molecules into random amino acids and icy Ginnungagap runoff. Safe in their boat, the two dwarves cackled with glee.
"I should have mentioned," Fialar called to us, "the ride back is a little more expensive. All your valuables, please. Gather them together in one of your bags. Toss them to me. Otherwise, we'll leave you here."
Blitzen cursed.
"They'll leave us here anyway. That's what they do."
At the moment, heading inland to confront Fenris Wolf was very low on my wish list. At the top of my wish list was cry and plead for the treacherous dwarves to take me back to Boston. My voice quavered, but I tried to act more courageous than I felt.
"Get lost," I told the dwarves. "We don't need you anymore."
Fialar and Gialar exchanged looks. Already their boat was drifting farther away.
"Didn't you hear the wolf?"
Fialar spoke more slowly, as if he'd overestimated my intelligence.
"You're stuck on that island, with Fenris. That's a bad thing."
"Yeah, we know," I said.
"The wolf will eat you," Fialar cried. "Bound or not, he will eat you. At dawn, the island will disappear and take you with it."
"Thanks for the lift," I said. "Pleasant trip back." Fialar flung up his hands.
"Idiots! Suit yourself. We'll collect your valuables from your skeletal remains next year. Come on, Gialar, back to the docks. We might have time to pick up another load of tourists."
Gialar revved the motor. The longship turned and disappeared into the darkness. I faced my friends. I got the feeling they wouldn't mind another rousing speech like, "We're a family of empty cups, and we will dominate!" "Well," I said, "after running from an army of dwarves, facing a monster squirrel, killing three giant sisters, and butchering a pair of talking goats, how bad can Fenris Wolf be?"
"Very bad,"
Sam and Blitz said in unison. Hearthstone made two okay signs, crossed them at the wrists, and flicked them apart, the sign for awful.
"Right."
I pulled my sword from pendant form. The blade's glow made the heather look even paler and more ghostly.
"Jack, you ready?"
"Dude," said the sword, "I was forged ready. Still, I get the feeling we're walking into a trap here."
"Show of hands," I asked my friends. "Is anybody surprised by that?" Nobody raised their hand.
"Okay, cool," said Jack. "As long as you realize you'll probably all die in agony and start Ragnarok, I'm down. Let's do this."
Chapter 62. The Small Bad Wolf. I remember the first time I saw Plymouth Rock. My reaction was, "That's it?" Same with the Liberty Bell in Philadelphia and the Empire State Building in New York. Up close and personal, they seemed smaller than I'd imagined, not worth the hype. That's how I felt when I saw Fenris Wolf. I'd heard all these terrible stories about him. The gods were too scared to feed him. He could break the strongest chains. He'd eaten Tyr's hand. He was going to swallow the sun on Doomsday. He was going to devour Odin in a single bite. I expected a wolf bigger than King Kong, with flamethrower breath, death ray eyes, and laser nostrils. What I got instead was a wolf the size of a wolf. We stood at the top of the ledge, looking down into the valley where Fenris sat calmly on his haunches. He was larger than an average Labrador retriever, but definitely no bigger than me. His legs were long and muscular, built for running. His shaggy gray coat swirled with tufts of black. Nobody would have called him cute, not with those gleaming white fangs, or the bones littering the ground around his paws, but he was a handsome animal. I'd been hoping to find the wolf lying on his side, hog-tied and fastened to the ground with nails, staples, duct tape, and crazy glue. Instead, the golden rope Gleipnir restrained him more like the leg irons used to transport criminals. The glimmering cord was tied around all four of his ankle joints, allowing enough slack for the wolf to shuffle around. Part of the rope had apparently once been tied around the wolf's snout like a muzzle. That section now fell across his chest in a loose loop. The rope didn't even appear to be anchored to the ground. I wasn't sure what was keeping Fenris from leaving the island, unless there was one of those doggy no-no invisible fences around the perimeter. All in all, if I were the god Tyr, getting my hand bit off so the other gods would have time to bind the wolf, I would have been pretty torqued off at this shoddy work. Didn't the Aesir have one decent god of knots? I glanced at my friends. "Where's the real Fenris? That has to be a decoy, right?"
"No."
Sam's knuckles whitened on the handle of her axe.
"That's him. I can sense it."
The wolf turned toward the sound of our voices. His eyes shone with a familiar blue light that sent a xylophone mallet down the back of my ribcage.
"Well."
His voice was deep and rich. His black lips curled in a very human sneer.
"Who do we have here? Have the gods sent me a snack?"
I revised my impression of the wolf. Maybe his size was ordinary. Maybe he didn't sneeze laser beams, but his eyes were colder and more intelligent than any predator I'd ever encountered, animal or human. His snout quivered as if he could smell the fear on my breath. And his voice flowed over me like molasses, dangerously smooth and sweet. I remembered my first feast in Valhalla, when the Thanes didn't want Sam to speak in her defense, because they feared the silver tongue of Loki's children. Now, I understood. The last thing I wanted to do was approach the wolf. Yet his tone said, "Come on down. We're all friends here." The entire caldera was maybe 100 yards across, which meant the wolf was much closer than I would have liked. The ground sloped gently, but the heather was slick under my feet. I was terrified I might slip and slide right between the wolf's paws.
"I'm Magnus Chase."
My voice was not as smooth as molasses. I forced myself to meet Fenris's gaze.
"We have an appointment."
The wolf bared his teeth.
"We do indeed, son of Frey. Veneer spawn have such an interesting scent. Normally I only get to devour the children of Thor, or Odin, or my old friend Tyr."
"Sorry to disappoint."
"Oh, not at all."
The wolf paced, the rope gleaming between his feet, barely slowing his gait.
"I'm quite pleased. I've been waiting a long time for this."
On my left, Hearthstone banged his white oak staff against the rocks. The heather plants glowed brighter, a fine silvery mist rising from them like a lawn sprinkler system. With his free hand, Hearth signed to me, "Flowers make the prison. Stay within." Fenris Wolf chuckled.
"The elf is wise. Not powerful enough. Not nearly powerful enough to face me. But he is right about the heather. I can't stand the stuff. Funny, though. How many brave mortals choose to leave its safety and come within my reach? They want to test their skill against me, or perhaps they simply want to make sure I am still bound."
The wolf leered at Blitzen.
"Your father was one of those. A noble dwarf with the best of intentions. He approached me. He died. His bones are around here somewhere."
Blitzen let loose a guttural scream. Sam and I had to restrain him to keep him from charging the wolf with his new harpoon.
"Quite sad, really," the wolf mused. "Beely was his name. He was right, of course. This ridiculous rope has been loosening for ages. At one time, I was completely unable to walk. After a few centuries, I managed to hobble. I still can't cross the heather. The farther I move from the center of the island, the more the rope tightens and the more pain I endure. But it's progress. The real breakthrough came, a little over 2 years ago, when I finally managed to shake that cursed muzzle off my snout."
Sam faltered.
2 years ago.
The wolf tilted his head.
"That's right, little sister. Surely you knew. I began whispering in the dreams of Odin. What a fine idea it would be to make you, the daughter of Loki, a Valkyrie. What a fine way to turn a potential enemy into a valuable friend."
"No," Sam said.
Odin would never listen to you.
Would he not?
The wolf snarled with pleasure.
That's the wonderful thing about you so-called good folk. You hear what you want to believe. You think your conscience is whispering to you, when it is, perhaps, the wolf instead. Oh, you have done very well, little sister, bringing Magnus to me.
I didn't bring him to you, Sam shouted, and I'm not your little sister.
No, I smell the changeling blood in your veins. You could be powerful. You could make our father proud. Why do you fight it?
The wolf's teeth were as sharp as ever, his leer just as vicious, but his voice filled with sympathy, disappointment, melancholy. His tone said,
I could help you. I am your brother.
Sam took a step forward. I grabbed her arm.
Fenris! I said, you sent those wolves, the night my mother died.
Of course.
You wanted to kill me.
Now, why would I want that?
His blue eyes were worse than mirrors. They seemed to reflect back at me all my failures, my cowardice, my weakness, my selfishness in running away when my mother needed me most.
You were valuable to me, Magnus. But you needed seasoning. Hardship is wonderful for cultivating power. And look, you have succeeded. The first child of Frey, strong enough to find the Sword of Summer. You have brought me the means to escape these bonds at last.
The world spun beneath me. I felt like I was back on Stanley the horse. Plummeting with no reins, no saddle, no control. All this time, I'd assumed Fenris wanted me dead. That's why his wolves had attacked our apartment. But his real target had been my mother. He'd killed her to affect me. That idea was even worse than believing my mom had died to protect me. She'd died so this monster could forge me into his harbinger, a demigod capable of attaining the Sword of Summer. I was filled with so much rage I couldn't focus. In my hand, the sword began to hum. I realized how long Jack had been silent. He pulled at my arm, tugging me forward.
Jack, I muttered. Jack, what are you—
The wolf laughed.
You see, the Sword of Summer is destined to cut these bonds. You cannot stop it. The children of Frey have never been fighters, Magnus Chase. You can't hope to control the blade, much less fight me with it. Your usefulness is at an end. Surt will arrive soon. The blade will fly to his hands. Mistake,
Jack murmured, tugging to escape my grip.
Mistake to bring me here. Yes,
the wolf purred.
Yes, it was my fine blade. Surt thinks all of this was his idea, you understand. He's an imperfect tool. Like most fire giants, he's a lot of hot air, more bluster than brains, but he will serve his purpose. He'll be very happy to take possession of you.
Jack, you're my sword now, I said, though I could barely hold on with both hands.
Cut the cord,
Jack hummed insistently.
Cut the cord! Do it, Magnus Chase,
said Fenris.
Why wait for Surt? Cut me loose of your own free will, and I will be grateful. Perhaps I would even spare you and your friends.
Blitzen growled even better than the wolf. From his pack, he pulled out the new string and Skutti.
I was ready to bind this mutt. Now I think I might just strangle him.
I agree, Samir said.
He dies!
I wanted more than anything to join them. I wanted to charge the beast and run him through. The Sword of Summer was supposed to be the sharpest blade in the Nine Worlds. Surely it could cut wolf hide. I think we would have done it, but Hearthstone swept his staff in front of us. The runestone Perthrow flared with gold light.
Look.
The command was more a tremor than a sound. I turned and stared in amazement at Hearthstone.
The bones.
He didn't use sign language. He didn't speak. His thought was simply there, clearing my mind like wind through fog. I looked again at the skeletons littering the ground. All of them had been heroes, the children of Odin, Thor, or Tyr. Dwarves, humans, elves. They'd all been tricked, enraged, enchanted by Fenris. They'd all died. Hearthstone was the only one of us who couldn't hear the wolf's voice. He was the only one thinking clearly. Suddenly, the sword was easier to control. It didn't stop fighting me, but I felt the balance shift slightly in my favor.
I'm not freeing you, I told the wolf, and I don't need to fight you. We'll wait for Surt. We'll stop him.
The wolf sniffed the air.
Oh, too late for that. You don't need to fight me? Poor mortal. I don't need to fight you either. There are others to do that for me. As I said, good folk are so easy to manipulate, so ready to do my work for me. Here are some now.
Across the island, a voice yelled,
Stop!
At the opposite side of the ridge stood our old friend Ganilla with a Valkyrie on either side of her. Fanning out to her left and right were my old hallmates, TJ, Halfborn, Mallory, and X the Half-Troll.
Caught in the act of aiding the enemy, Ganilla said. You've signed your own death warrants.
Chapter 63. I hate signing my own death warrant.
Well, well, said the wolf. I haven't had this much company since my binding party.
Ganilla gripped her spear. She didn't look at the wolf, as if ignoring him might make him go away.
Thomas Jefferson, Jr., she said. You and your hallmates take the prisoners. Go around the edges, obviously. Slow and careful.
TJ didn't look happy about it, but he nodded. His army jacket was buttoned up tight. His bayonet gleamed in the moonlight. Mallory Keene gave me the stink eye, but that could have been her version of a happy greeting. The two of them went left, picking their way across the rim of the crater, while the three Valkyries kept their spears pointed at Fenris. X lumbered to the right, followed by Halfborn, who was twirling his battle axes and whistling under his breath, as if this was a pleasant stroll through a field of fallen enemies.
Sam, I muttered, if we're taken... I know. No one will be here to stop Surt. I know.
We can take them, Blit said. They're not wearing armor, much less fashionable armor.
No, I said. These are my shield siblings. Let me try talking to them.
Parth signed, Crazy, you? The beauty of sign language. He could have meant, Are you crazy? Or, I'm crazy, just like you. I decided to interpret it as a show of support. Fenris Wolf sat on his haunches and tried to scratch his ear, which wasn't possible with the cord binding his legs. He sniffed the air and grinned at me.
Interesting company you keep, Magnus Chase. Someone is hiding, but I can smell him. Which one is he, eh? Perhaps I will get a feast today after all.
I glanced at Sam. She looked just as mystified as I felt.
Sorry, Fuzzball, I said.
No idea what you're talking about.
Fenris laughed.
We shall see. I wonder if he will dare to show his true face.
Chase!
Gunilla plucked a hammer from her bandolier.
Do not speak with the wolf again, or I will cave in your skull.
Gunilla, I said, great to see you again, too.
Surt is on his way right now. We don't have time for this.
Oh? Have you made common cause with the Fire Lord who killed you? Or perhaps that was part of the plan from the beginning, to get you into Valhalla.
Sam sighed. For a child of Thor, you think too much.
And you, daughter of Loki, listen too little.
Jefferson, hurry it up!
My hallmates got to either side of us. Mallory made a tisk-tisk sound.
You led us on quite a chase, Chase.
Clever, I said. How long have you been waiting to use that line? Mallory smirked. Next to her, X wiped beads of green sweat from his forehead.
Wolf's rope is loose. This is not good.
From across the valley, Gunilla yelled,
No fraternizing! I want them in chains!
TJ dangled four sets of handcuffs from his finger.
Here's the thing, Magnus. Gunilla made it clear that if we don't prove our loyalty to Valhalla by apprehending you, we will spend the next 100 years in the boiler room shoveling coal. So, consider yourself under arrest, blah, blah, blah.
Halfborn grinned.
But the other thing is, we're Vikings. We're pretty bad at following orders. So, consider yourself free again.
TJ let the handcuffs slip from his finger.
Oops.
My spirits lifted.
You mean...
It means, you idiot, Mallory said, that we're here to help.
I love you guys. What do you need us to do?
TJ asked.
Sam nodded to Blitzen.
Our dwarf has a rope to rebind the wolf. If we can...
Enough!
Gunilla shouted. On either side, her Valkyrie lieutenants readied their spears.
I will take you all back in chains if I must.
Fenris howled with pleasure.
That would be delightful to watch. Unfortunately, Valkyrie, you are too slow. My other friends have arrived, and they won't be taking any prisoners.
X gazed toward the south, his neck muscles rippling like freshly poured cement.
There!
At the same moment, Hearthstone pointed with his staff, the whole length of white oak suddenly burning with gold fire. On the ridge to the right, between the Valkyries and us, a dozen fire giants marched into view. Each stood about 10 feet tall. They wore leather scale armor, carried swords the size of plow blades, and had various axes and knives hanging from their belts. Their complexions were an assortment of volcanic colors, ash, lava, pumice, obsidian. The fields of heather may have been noxious to the wolf, but the stuff didn't seem to bother the fire giants. Wherever they stepped, the plants burned and smoked. In the middle of their line stood Satan's fashion consultant himself, the Fire Lord Surt, wearing a trim-cut three-piece suit of chainmail, a tie, and a dress shirt that appeared to be woven from flame, elegantly accessorized with a burning scimitar in his hand. He looked pretty good, despite the fact that his nose was still cut off. That fact, at least,
made me happy.
Blitzen clenched his teeth.
That's my design! He stole my design!
Magnus Chase!
Surt's voice boomed.
I see you have brought my new sword. Excellent!
Jack almost leaped out of my hands. I must have looked ridiculous trying to keep him under control, like a fireman wrestling a high-pressure hose.
My master, Jack said. He shall be my master.
Surt laughed.
Surrender the sword, and I will kill you quickly.
He sneered at Gunilla and her two lieutenants.
As for Odin's wenches, I make no promises.
Fenris Wolf rose and stretched.
Lord Surt, as much as I love posturing and threats, can we move things along? Moonlight is a-wasting.
TJ, I said.
Yeah?
You asked how you could help. My friends and I need to rebind Fenris Wolf. Can you keep those fire giants busy?
TJ smiled.
I charged uphill against 1,700 Confederates. I think I can handle a dozen fire giants.
He called across the valley.
Captain Gunilla, are you with us? Because I'd rather not fight another civil war.
Gunilla scanned the army of fire giants. Her expression soured, as if she found them even more repugnant than she found me. She raised her spear.
Death to Surt! Death to the enemies of Asgard!
She and her lieutenants charged at the giants.
I guess we're in business,
TJ said.
Fix bayonets!
Chapter 64. Whose idea was it to make this wolf unkillable? Valhalla's daily combat training finally made sense to me. After the terror and chaos of war in the hotel courtyard, I was more prepared to face Fenris Wolf and the fire giants, even if they didn't have AK-47s or chests painted with, "Come at me, bro!" I was still having trouble controlling the sword, though. The only thing that helped? Jack now seemed divided between wanting to fly to Surt's hand or flying toward the wolf. Lucky for me, I needed to approach the wolf. Sam knocked a giant's thrown axe out of the air.
Rebinding Fenris. Any idea how we're doing that?
Yes, I said. Maybe. Not really. A fire giant charged in our direction. Blitzen was so angry. Between the wolf gloating about his dad's death and Surt stealing his fashion ideas, that he howled like Crazy Alice in Chinatown and rammed his harpoon right through the giant's gut. The fire giant stumbled off, belching flames and taking the harpoon with him. Hearthstone pointed to the wolf.
Idea, he signed. Follow me.
I thought we needed to stay in the heather, I recalled. Hearthstone raised his staff. Across the ground at his feet, a rune spread like a shadow. Heather bloomed all around it, sprouting new tendrils.
Alges, Sam marveled. The rune of shielding. I've never seen it used.
I felt as if I were seeing Hearthstone for the first time. He didn't stumble. He didn't faint. He strode confidently forward, the flowers expanding before him like an unrolling carpet. Not only was Hearth immune to the wolf's voice, his rune magic was literally redrawing the boundaries of Fenris's prison. We inched into the valley, following Hearthstone. On the right side of the island, my Inheriar friends clashed with Surt's forces. Halfborn Gunderson buried his axe in the breastplate of a giant. X picked up another fire breather and tossed him off the side of the ridge. Mallory and TJ fought back to back, jabbing and slashing and dodging blasts of flame. Gunilla and her two Valkyrie lieutenants were fighting Surt himself. Between the shining white spears